Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
I'm Kathy Gordon, and you're also in line with Heidi Russell. We're instructors. We're going to lead the call today, but while we're just kind of waiting for people to get on, anyone else want to tell us the ages of your kids?
Hi, this is Mara. I'm in Portland, Oregon. I have a 3.5-year-old.
Great. Thanks, Mara.
Hi, Mara. Welcome.
Thanks.
I'm Kirsten. I'm from Westminster, Maryland, and I have a 2, almost 3-year-old.
Great. Yeah.
I'm Clara. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and mine is only 7 months, so I'm looking to the future.
Wow.
Great.
Great. I'm glad you're here.
Hi, I'm Ashley. My name is Ashley. I'm from Texas, and I teach parenting to at-risk parents.
Wow.
Oh, wonderful.
Do you have kids, Ashley?
I do. I have a son who's 22, and I have a daughter who is 17.
Wow. Well, we're really glad you're here.
Thank you.
Okay. Heidi.
All right. Here we go. I'm noticing the time, and so we're going to get started. I'm going to mute everybody by putting us in lecture mode for the first part of our presentation. And we will leave time at the end of our call to answer some questions. At that time, you can press *2, and that will raise your hand and let us know that you have a question. This call is being recorded, and I'm going to pause for just a minute to start the recording. Welcome, everyone, to our teleseminar today, which is called Setting Limits Without Yelling or Threats. My name is Heidi Russell. I'm a hand-in-hand parenting certified instructor, and with me is Kathy Gordon, who is also a certified instructor. We have a lot of people who registered for the call, and before we get to the meat of the seminar, I'm going to talk a little bit about hand-in-hand parenting while we let people get on the call and settle in. Hand-in-hand parenting is a nonprofit organization founded by Patty Whipfler over 25 years ago in 1989. Our mission is to make parenting life be what you want it to be and to give you tools and the support that you need to lift the difficulties out of your life and bring you closer to your child. Hand-in-hand parenting is an approach that really focuses our minds and our efforts on creating and maintaining and repairing a really solid connection with our children. Our approach is quite different from most of what's out there. What we find that works best is actually connecting with children. A child's sense of safety, which allows them to learn and thrive, depends on their feeling connected to us. So we offer 5 basic listening tools for promoting parent-child connection and for promoting good support for parents so that we can think well and we can be there for our children. We have 4 parent-to-child listening tools: special time, stay listening, play listening, and setting limits. And 1 parent-to-parent listening tool called listening partnerships. You can learn about our approach and our listening tools in a myriad of ways. We have numerous free articles and success stories on the website. We have free teleseminars like this one. We have self-guided video classes. And then our foundational parenting tools class is called the Hand-in-Hand Parenting Starter Class. When you take the online starter class, you get access to all the instructional videos for a year, and you'll be part of a 6-week mentoring and support call while you're learning and practicing the tools. In fact, the starter class is on sale this month, and we can tell you more about that later at the end of the call. We also have created a membership program called the Hand in Hand Parenting Club. When you become a member, each week you're sent a short instructional video along with real-life anecdotes that break down your toughest parenting challenges with step-by-step solutions. You'll also get a live coaching call each week with one of our instructors. Information about all of our resources can be found on our website, which is www.handinhandparenting.org. And we'll remind you about all of that information at the end of the call. Okay, wow, we have a great number of people joining us today, and we want to go ahead and get started. Kathy and I want to welcome you and thank you so much for being here. We know how tough it can be to arrange your schedule and childcare to commit to this hour. Whether you're with us live right now or you're listening to the recording, we really appreciate what it took for you to be here. We appreciate your commitment to your family, and we hope that you will come away from this call feeling a little bit uplifted with some new ideas and resources to make life go a little bit better for you and your family. And we're going to start by introducing ourselves. Then Kathy and I will talk about Hand in Hand's unique approach to setting limits and how you can set limits in a way that creates more cooperation, helps your kids think better, deepens your connection with your kids, and you can do all this while staying calm and connected. We're going to share some of our experience in setting limits with our own children, and then we should have a good chunk of time at the end to answer some of your questions directly. So I'm Heidi Russell. I live in Northern California in Petaluma with my husband and my six-year-old son. I came to find hand-in-hand parenting because parenting turned out to be way harder than I thought it would be, and I knew I needed support. I started practicing the hand-in-hand tools when my son was about 18 months old, and it was a life-changing discovery for me. I became really passionate about learning how to be a stronger leader in my family without being harsh and using punishments. And once I learned how effective the hand-in-hand approach was, I wanted to bring the information to others. So I joined the certification program, and here I am today. Kathy, thanks so much for being on the call with me today. Please tell us about yourself and your family.
I would love to. So, oh, dear. My computer just did this funny thing. So, thank you, Heidi. I'm thrilled to be on this call with you, too. And I'm the single adoptive mom of a 12-year-old boy who was born in Los Angeles, where we currently live. He was placed with me when he was 10 days old, but I didn't discover Hand in Hand until my son was around five. I had been practicing nonviolent parenting. It's a style of unconditional empathetic parenting. But we were still struggling with a lot of tantrums, especially around bedtime. And I won a consultation with our founder, Patty Whipler, and that hour with Patty changed our bedtime, my relationship with my son, and really our lives. I've been a teacher of one thing or another all my adult life, so when using the hand-in-hand listening tools made such a difference in my own little family, it was only natural I'd want to share these tools with others. Thus, I too became an instructor. So, setting limits. We're so glad you're here to hear our approach, to learn about our approach to setting limits. Hand in Hand has a unique three-step approach to setting limits. Those steps are listen, limit, and listen. We're going to walk you through all three of those steps. Our first step, listen, means that we listen to what's going on with our child and consider if a limit is needed here. So that you understand the first step of listening, we're going to ask you to rethink why we set limits. It's commonly thought that when a child is being disobedient or uncooperative, we set a limit to make them behave, right? Well, in order to explain how the hand-in-hand approach is different than that thinking, we need to take a minute to understand why a child goes off track and does something nutty or why they won't cooperate. At hand-in-hand, we believe that children are good. We believe that no child wants to be uncooperative, resistant, or even aggressive. If they do seem to be that way, it's because they've gotten stuck, disconnected, and they can't think. So already we're sort of asking you to make a shift in why a child is off track, why they're doing that nutty behavior. And it's helpful to understand a little bit about our brain. The short story is that in order for a human being to function well, and by that I mean be flexible, be willing to able and able to plan, to cooperate, to reason. Well, in order to be able to do all that, all parts of the brain need to be integrated. And in order for that to happen, the brain has to sense safety. When children feel connected to a loving adult, really seen by that adult and feel safe, then they're able to easily access the thinking part of their brain, which allows them to be cooperative and clear thinking. But when that connection breaks, and it breaks all the time, the emotional brain, what we call the limbic system, it kind of goes ballistic and it takes over. It effectively shuts down the prefrontal cortex, or our access to the prefrontal cortex, the thinking part of our brain, making it impossible for a child to access those higher functions. That's why we say that an uncooperative child is a disconnected child. Then there's one more thing to know about how our brains operate. When a child experiences a break in connection, a disappointment, or a big transition such as a move, death in the family, new sibling, or even bigger experiences like early medical intervention, adoption, abuse, all these big and little hurts get stuck in our limbic system, the emotional processing part of our brain. Those feelings and memories get stored there, and that's what makes it sometimes difficult for us to feel connected and to feel safe. All that hurt, fear, and disconnection, it just gunks up the brain. It makes it really tough for anyone to think. Therefore, a little break in connection, like you just turning away to use the phone, it can trigger those bigger stored up hurts. When a kiddo who feels disconnected and some old hurt gets triggered, they go off track, their behavior gets nutty, and they tell us very clearly when it's time to set a limit. When we don't read the signal, they'll send another. And if still we don't respond, they'll send the signals that are bound to trigger us. And by the way, since hand in hand is not permissive parenting, we believe in setting limits early and often. And part of this first step, listen, is to notice early in the game that our child is off track. You probably recognize some of these early signs that your kiddo's going off track. They can't maintain relaxed eye contact with you. They don't want to be touched. They're not open to change or choice. They want things a particular way, and any variation upsets them. And you've probably tried giving choices, discussing, reasoning, but nope, it usually doesn't work very long because they can't think. A couple other signs are they won't include others in play, or they'll only play with certain children. Their attention is stuck on a certain play thing, and they won't connect with anyone. They're listless, unfocused, preoccupied with a repetitive activity like twirling their hair, sucking their thumb, or holding onto a comfort item. A child who feels disconnected can't think, so they have very little flexibility, and earnestly trying to get him to do things differently, you know, to change in that moment, it usually provokes protest and unhappy feelings. So great, you've determined that your child is off track, can't think, and they're signaling for help or asking for a limit. That brings us to step two, bringing the limit. Heidi, how and why do we bring the limit?
Thanks, Kathy. Yes, we bring the limit to our children because we recognize that their behavior is off track and we need to move in close to reconnect. Children can't make sense of the things you say or the instructions you give when they're off track. That means that verbal orders like, don't pull the cat's tail, don't work when your child can't think. And if you just say the limit or yell the limit over and over, you're setting yourself up for frustration and anger at your child. You're expecting obedience and thoughtfulness when your child has proven that his limbic system is off kilter and his reasoning ability is offline and shut off. So what we do is we must bring the limit. Before saying anything, go to your child and make the irrational behavior stop.
gently but firmly. And you'll want to physically intervene and offer eye contact, saying something like, I can't let you do that. You'll want to keep your statement simple. We like to say 5 words or less. Your child isn't able to think, so more words is not going to help. You'll put your hand on your child's hand that was pulling the cat's tail, and you'll make gentle contact with your child. And as you hold the limit and you offer warm eye contact, the child will most likely begin to shed the negative feelings. This way of looking at limits is very different from ways people usually think about setting limits. It's not a power play, which might intimidate the child into compliance, but actually prevents him from thinking because he becomes afraid and just drives his brain even farther away from thinking. It's not a punishment, which hurts the child either physically or emotionally and makes him feel even more distant from the adults around him, preventing him from thinking well. Bringing the limit is a way to help the child feel the feelings that are the real cause of your child's off-track behavior. So now you're holding the limit. You've got your hand on your child's hand. You're physically preventing him from hurting the cat or taking the toy out of his sister's hand or whatever it is that you needed to move in and stop from happening. And with your closeness, your physical closeness and your eye contact and the gentle firmness that you're offering, your child is likely now loudly upset, crying, or tantruming. And this is where the third step of listening, limit setting happens, and it's called listening. So now your child is shedding the bad feelings that drove the behavior in the first place. And this is the healing step of setting limits. This is the rebuilding of connection. In hand parenting, we call it stay listening. You listen, you offer caring, and you let your child do the work of getting the feelings out. And you don't give advice or interrupt. You just listen with as much warmth as you can muster. And when your child reaches the end of her upset, with your warm attention, her clear thinking will return. This way of setting limits can be seen as a partnership. It's your child's job to signal that he or she can't think. And it's your job as a parent to read the signal and stop the off-track behavior. It's his job to offload the big feelings, and it's your job to offer connection so his mind fills with the reassurance that it needs so he can get back to his loving and cooperative self. Most of us have experienced our child having a hard time sharing at one time or another. It can be with a sibling or another child. So what's a good way to handle it? I remember when my son was a toddler and we were at a play event at the local gymnasium. They had a big playroom and there were lots of toddlers in there. My son loved cars and trucks. And when he saw one that he loved in the hand of another child, he went right for it and tried to snatch it from the little boy's hand. A tugging match ensued and I was able to move in close and put my hand over my boy's hand and I warmly said, "You can play with this when Ezra's done." And I moved in, I brought the limit, and I physically prevented him from wrenching it from the other child. And when he caught my eye, he let go of the truck, and he also let go of a big cry. And he sat with me and cried for a few minutes. I listened lovingly, fully understanding how much he wanted it. I know how much he loves cars. I know how much he wanted that truck. And so it was easy for me in that moment to, you know, be compassionate and listen to his big feelings about it. Every now and then while he was crying, I would remind him of my presence by saying, "You will have a turn when Enzo's done." And once his cry was over, he was able to join in the play more flexibly. He wasn't zeroed in on that particular truck anymore, and when he had his turn in the end, he was able to enjoy it. Sometimes it will serve you both well to keep things light and set a limit playfully. As you're moving in to stop your child from reaching into the cookie jar before dinner, you can use a sweetly toned, "No, no, no," and you can swoop your child into a hug as you place the lid back on the jar. That's just an example of, you know, a limit that was set with playfulness rather than any other need. Another way that I use playful limits is when my son is experimenting with bad language or hurtful words. When he's feeling upset and grumpy, he will sometimes call me a mean mama. It doesn't even necessarily come from anything I'm doing. It's just him being a big grump and, you're a mean mama. And so I see this as a signal that he's feeling disconnected from me for some reason. So I like to say, who, me? But I'm the most loving and gracious mother in the whole world. And I'll move in to hug him slowly, and he's looking at me like, oh, wow, this is not what I expected. And I move in to hug him, or I try to grip him and shower him with kisses, and often this will set him off running, and I'll chase after him, and soon he's squealing with delight, and we're both laughing, and we're close again. Laughter is just as good of a tension release as crying, and setting limits playfully is something that you'll find yourself wanting to do often. Another way you can bring a limit is when your child is particularly stuck in a certain behavior and has trouble moving forward. It could be something simple like putting on shoes to leave the house, or a bigger subject like learning a new task. In this sense, we're bringing the limit as an expectation that the child can do something that they are resistant to for some reason. My son, who's now 6, tends to be a picky eater. He always has been, and he isn't often open to trying new things. And I understand that this is a place where he can be inflexible habitually. And one day, not too long ago, I was feeling like I had time to listen to his feelings about it, and I proposed a new project. And I broached the subject by saying that as people get older, their tastes change. And I suggested that we do a new taste test every day so that he can experience different foods. And he was open to the idea and asked what the first thing would be. And because I wanted it to be a successful project, I brought up a food that he thought he didn't like, but he probably would, which was apricot jam. And he got really upset when I suggested he try apricot jam. He started to cry, and he said it was unfair. He hated jam, and why was I making him do this? And he cried and cried. And I held the limit by saying, I think you can try just a little bit. I kept it simple. I kept my words very simple, but it was just a reassurance that I felt like he could do it. And he would cry about how unfair it was and how he could never do it. And I kept listening, and about after 5 minutes of crying and me listening and holding the limit that I thought he could do it, he wrapped up his protest by saying, if I try the jam, can it just be a tiny bit? And I agreed to this, and we went to the kitchen, and he bravely eyed the little bit of jam on the end of the spoon, and then he tasted it, and then he was like, oh, this is really good. And we had a good laugh about it. And then he asked to taste some honey, which he hadn't wanted to try before because it was too sticky. And the experiment has been ongoing in our house. After that big cry at the beginning of launching the project, he's much more open to trying things that he didn't previously like. He's even now suggesting things like olives and strawberries, things that he would never eat before.
Wow, Heidi, that's a wonderful story of holding a limit, which is actually an expectation that your son could do it. He could try a new food. That's great. So there's a couple more ideas that will be good to mention in terms of our approach to setting limits. The first is that we set a limit cleanly and clearly, as Heidi said, using 5 words or less. No explanations, no rationalizations, no negotiations. Once we determine the limit is useful in that moment, we say a nice warm no to the behavior or the thing, and accompanied by a big warm yes to our connection. Like, no, sweetie, no second cookie, you get me. There are a few ways that parents attempt to change a child's behavior that are not really setting limits. Giving choices is great, but remember we said that if a child is off track, they can't think. So if you give a choice and you start to get dissatisfaction or endless negotiation, this is a clear signal that your child can't think. And they need the gift of your kind decision or no, along with the warm yes of your attention and connection. Another one is saying, if you do this, then you can do that. Or if you don't do this, then you can't do that. this is also not setting a limit. We're actually threatening our child with a consequence. And in Hand in Hand, we like to say that the very best consequence, maybe the only consequence, is always connection. Lastly, we want you to know that our approach to setting limits only works well if you're using all the rest of our listening tools. We're focusing on setting limits on this call, but if you're just setting limits, you kind of become the limit police, and your relationship with your kid gets out of balance. There are so many circumstances where a little special time, where you give your child some one-on-one, undivided attention, you follow their lead, do anything they want, and you set a timer, you know, just that little bit of special time, 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, it really helps everything else go well and keeps your child from going off track. Lots of connecting play, roughhousing, and playing with their refusal or their resistance, and then listening for the laughter, bringing that play and connection into your family. This kind of connection and attention, again, it keeps their connection cup full, so they're more cooperative more of the time. So, for example, getting out of the house in the morning, tidying up, homework, even bedtime, all of these times go better for the entire family if you're providing connection and play. You may find you actually need to set fewer limits. You certainly won't feel as inclined to threaten or bargain when you're having a contest to see who can pick up the most toys, or getting under the covers for a fart party just before turning off the lights, or challenging squabbling siblings to a sock fight and then encouraging them to gang up on you. When we say using all of the hand-in-hand listening tools, we want to make sure we tell you about our most important tool that gives us the gas to be playful, to be patient, calm, and to set clear and loving limits. That is our parent-to-parent support tool called Listening Partnerships. Even after 7 years of practicing these tools with my son, I still find it challenging to bring a limit or an expectation and then calmly and lovingly listen. Remember when I first talked about how kids signal us they need connection by going off track? If we don't read the signal, they'll send another, and if we still can't respond, they'll send signals that are bound to trigger us. And I also talked about big and little hurts, feelings and memories that get stored in our limbic system, the emotional processing part of our brain. They gunk up our brain and make it really tough to think. Well, I was talking about that happening in reference to our kids, but that same thing happens to us when we get triggered. We might find ourselves feeling absolutely powerless when faced with the off-track behavior of that 3-year-old or 13-year-old. Because when we were shamed, yelled at, or punished when we were little, that we took that inside. We stored that in our limbic system, and we stored those feelings of feeling small and powerless. So when our 3-year-old screams no or hits the baby brother again, or our 13-year-old says, "I hate you, go away," that's when we start yelling and making threats. Because we're not just feeling the frustration of the present moment. We feel little and powerless, just like we did when we were small. And time again, you may promise yourself and your kids that you'll stop yelling. And time again, you'll find yourself getting triggered. Fortunately, Hand in Hand has a powerful parent-to-parent support tool we call Listening Partnerships that can help heal our hurts, so that we're no longer being triggered by our kiddo's behavior. In a listening partnership, you exchange listening time with another parent. It's very simple. You set a timer for maybe 15, 20, or 30 minutes, and your partner listens to you without interrupting or reflecting back. They've promised not to fix or give advice. Their job, while they're listening to you, is to give you their warm attention, just like we give our kids our warm attention when we listen to them. When you listen to someone, it's really good to think well of your partner. You can think, you are good. Everyone you're talking about is good, and you will figure it out. What that warm attention does is it allows the person to access feelings and memories like a stream of consciousness, to laugh, cry, sweat, shake, yawn, as we offload all that stress and old hurts that make us feel powerless in the present moment. And then when the timer goes off and the first person's finished, you switch and listen to the other person for the same amount of time. What makes listening partnerships so powerful is the safety you create. You've promised not to judge. You've promised never to refer to anything your partner says ever again. And at the end of our call, when we tell you about some of the resources Hand in Hand offers, we'll mention where you might find like-minded parents who are eager to create this kind of safety where you can exchange listening time and heal those old hurts. I'll tell you a quick little story about one of my experiences with listening partnerships and setting limits. A few years ago, my son had an assignment. Well, actually, I gave him the assignment because we were homeschooling at the time. It was an assignment to underline the main idea in each small paragraph, and there were four paragraphs of about four sentences each. Now, my son had some learning challenges, and he learned to read late, so he's got a lot of anxiety around reading. And when I gave him the assignment, he protested and melted down, saying, "I can't, I can't." Well, I wasn't sure if he really, maybe he really couldn't read the text. So for 2 days in a row, I did what I call a workaround. I gave him a different, kind of easier assignment. Finally, I had a chance to get some listening time where I explored all the swirling thoughts in my head, such as, you know, does he need vision therapy? What kind of therapy does he need now? How am I going to pay for it? And I also explored my big fears, like, What if he's never able to read well? What if schoolwork is always hard for him? And I also explored, like, my feelings of, like, of guilt of, well, you know, this must be my fault. What have I done wrong? And, of course, that brought me back to childhood and, you know, feeling wrong in childhood. But as, so as I talked about all that kind of stream of consciousness, I got to cry hard as I worked on old hurts and current fears. And after I emptied my own emotional backpack, I had this clear thought. I don't know what his eyes can see, but I do know that he has feelings around it. So that afternoon, I brought a limit. And it was actually an expectation that he could do it. "You can do it, sweetie," I said. "This is what we're going to do today." Well, of course, he protested and he cried, and I listened. He kind of threw himself on the floor, and I don't know whether he took off his shirt or he had his shirt, but then he started to whip me with his shirt, getting a little aggressive. Well, I turned it playful, and I kept us both safe by I grabbed a blanket, and I was blocking his attempt to whip me with the blanket. He's trying to whip me over the blanket and under the blanket, and he started giggling. We kind of collapsed on the floor, and he was, you know, now it was kind of a pillow fight. I was hiding under the blanket, and so about, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes of stay listening to his cries and protests and then play listening as the aggression turned into giggles, he collapsed on the floor, heaved a big sigh, and asked for special time. So we did. We did 5 minutes of special time. I set the timer. He wanted to throw the football. We came in. He sat down, and he read the four paragraphs easy peasy. I was blown away. Like, there was not a problem. And the point is that once I was able to get my own fears out of the way in listening time, I was able to calmly set a limit, in this case an expectation, and allow my son to offload his feelings, his anxiety. I was able to think well after my listening time, and he was able to think well after I set a limit and listen. So that's the end of the presentation part of our call. We talked about setting limits cleanly, clearly, warmly, holding the limit, bringing the limit. We've talked about then listening to feelings, stay listening, and sometimes that turns playful. We call that play listening. And then we've talked about how we can heal our own triggers and work on our own fears and hurts so that we can think well, so that we can be patient and playful and be there for our kiddos. So now we have some time for some questions. If you have a question, you want to press *2. That'll raise your hand and put you in the queue, and we will get to as many questions as we can. So if you have a question, go ahead and hit *2. Great. Is somebody
from Oregon. Is it Roberta?
Hi. Actually, my name is Ruthanne, and thank you for the group call. I really appreciate it. I'm having a little difficulty around setting limits. You mentioned your son would sometimes get aggressive when he set a limit, and I'm trying to use hand-in-hand techniques with that. And the challenge is that, like, sometimes he'll just grab my hair and when he's upset. And so I'm stuck with trying to figure out how to gently undo his hand from my hair, for example, and without hurting him. So it becomes a real uncomfortable situation for me because I don't want to hurt him. But then I'm like, I don't want him, you know, what I understand from hand in hand, to feel guilty that I let him pull my hair, you know, feel guilty later about letting him get away with, you know what I mean? And so if I do block him from hurting myself or hurting something else, sometimes, even though I'm doing it very gently, he'll start saying, stop hurting me, over and over again. And I'm, like, very scared that, you know, I'll get in trouble even though I'm, he's just upset and he's saying it that way. And then it just becomes a very uncomfortable situation for me. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And how old is your son?
He's 7 now.
Okay, great. Yeah. So, so there's a couple of things. One is that, you know, we have replays of wonderful teleseminars on setting limits on aggression, what to do when kids lash out. And, you know, if you go to our website and you put in replay, a whole list, like 3 pages of teleseminars will come up, and there are several there on aggression.
Excellent.
And because when, you know, the hand-in-hand perspective is that an aggressive child is a scared child. And so it's really, really crucial that you're using all of the tools, that he's getting regular special time and that also that you are getting listening time. Because one of the things that you'll want to do is, one, sort of kind of notice patterns. My son tends to be aggressive. So, you know, I need to do things like notice patterns. I really lean heavily into our first step of listen, like trying to catch the off-track behavior and offer connection before it even gets to the point where I have to set a limit. And when I have moved in and set a limit, you know, I have a house, I mentioned grabbing a blanket off the couch. I have, I have blankets. We have mats. We have pillows. You know, I've gotten pretty facile with, you know, if I'm going to set a limit, I'm going to have a blanket handy because let's say I'm setting a limit of whatever around, you know, brushing your teeth or putting on your pajamas. And my son starts to ramp up. Well, I've got a blanket that's right there. And then how am I approaching him? You know, am I coming around to the side of him so that, you know, so that I'm kind of setting a limit from the side and from the back so that he can't lash out with me, you know? So, you've kicked us off wonderfully with a very complicated question because you have to work on it from different angles in terms of really kind of noticing the flow and the patterns of the day, you know, so much so that like, oh, does this tend to happen more right after school? So I offer special time right after school. So, you know, it's hard for me to give you a specific answer to what to do in that moment other than to put your hand on his hand and lean into his hand so that your hair is not being pulled. But with an aggressive, scared child, we need to do a lot of work so that we're providing safety, providing connection, being a little facile, light on our feet or prepared in order to help keep safety before our hair gets pulled. Does that make sense?
I really appreciate that. Maybe I can keep my hair, back more and just be more prepared when the time comes, so that it doesn't necessarily even get the opportunity. Have blankets and pillows around. That's a great idea. And then also just, it sounds like, work more on building his sense of security so that there's not as much of a deep fear lingering there, work more on special time with him. We both went through some very challenging times, and there was a lot of anxiety that I saw build in both our lives through those times. So I see where it's coming from, and now I have a couple more tools. And thank you for telling me about the replays. I will go check those out.
Yes, great. Yes, especially check out the one when your child lashes out, because there's a lot of great information on how to be playful when, around aggression. So great. Thanks for such a great question.
Oh, thank you.
Heidi, did you want to throw anything in there, or do you think we?
I think that was great. I loved your answer, Kathy, and yeah.
Okay, great. So we'll move on to Jenna.
Hi,
Jen. Hang on, with Jenna. I tried to unmute you. Okay, great, Jenna.
Hi. I have a question. You were talking about the kind of the behavior where they get stuck on something and they can't move away from it. And one of my daughters, I have 4-year-old twins, this happens to her a lot. And so, for instance, yesterday she had a little blue bead, tiny little thing. She likes her little treasures. She loses them all the time. Yesterday she lost her little blue bead. And so we first tried to help her find it, but then when we couldn't find it, we told her that, it was gone. We weren't going to be able to find it.
Yeah.
And so she got stuck on it. She wouldn't move on to anything else, kept finding it. I was trying to do the laundry, and I finally stopped doing the laundry, went out to her and just said, "It's lost." And she screamed at me, "It's not lost." I did what I could, but she outlasts me with status. Mm-hmm. So, my limit on stay listening seems to be about half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
My partner's limit on stay listening seems to be about 5 minutes. She does not like the crying at all. But what ends up happening is before she can get to, to the end of her cry, where however long that might need to be, I don't know because I've never reached it, we have to distract her.
Yeah.
And she isn't able, so we still had to listen for the rest of the day periodically, every, 15 minutes. She kept coming back and saying, "Where's my blue bead? Where's my blue bead? I need my blue bead." And and then this morning she woke up. We were trying to get her out to go to preschool this morning. She was still upset we didn't find her blue bead. And so I'm just wondering, like, I don't know, like, how long does this take? I've been trying these techniques for about 6 months now, and I don't feel like I'm making very much progress with her.
Yeah. Heidi, you wanna?
Yeah, when some of these things are lodged, deeply, if something's happening over and over, often we call it an emotional project, which means that something happened, probably a long time ago. We don't know what it is. It got lodged in there, and it's gonna take a long time of listening to get there. What I like to do when I notice that my kid is, stuck in a certain area is I really do have to plan the time. And I know it's not easy to plan the time. I try to, and you're not going to be able to do it every time, but just to be able to expect one big chunk of time that you could commit to listening to her and see what happens when you get to the end. And before I would even get there, I would get a lot of listening time on the subject about how hard it is to listen to your child cry, because it is not easy. And if you're not resourced and if you're not feeling supported or well listened to, it's going to basically be impossible. So I really encourage you to get a good listener who can listen to you multiple times about how hard it is before you even commit to that time to listening to your child. And I promise you that if you get enough listening time around it, it will get easier for you. Kathy, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah. Jen, are you, you said you've been using the tools for about 6 months. And
yeah.
Are you able to give her, like, regular special time? Is that kind of part of it?
Yeah, I do special time. You know, before I learned about it, I was kind of doing something similar to special time. We just weren't calling it special time.
Right. Yeah.
We called it
okay.
Big Bed, where we all kind of wrestled together on the bed.
Yeah.
But then I started doing it with them separately, which is really important for this twin because she's kind of
yeah.
a non-dominant twin, and her sister always dominates the play. So, like, she really craves the special time now and will ask me for it. And so, like, even last night, she wanted to do it before bed, and I was trying to tell her we didn't have time. But then I was like, you know what? 2 minutes. I have 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You can have 2 minutes of special time. And that actually helps the, you know, going to bed process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
just,
I think,
you know, letting her
I
know
think
that,
I,
you know, there's that.
Yeah, I think I would agree with, I would echo what Heidi is saying, is that if I think it's going to be important. I think everything you're doing is fantastic, and you're on the right track. And somewhere along the line, she got some chunk of fear stuck in her limbic system. Who knows? You know, maybe her birth was slightly different than her twins, or you know, we don't know sometimes where that, you know, but that it's that chunk of fear that causes her to fixate. So I think, I mean, it's great what, you know, definitely she probably needs more special time than her twin. or what I say is like more frequent special time in smaller doses so that she has the timer that goes off and it could be. So, sorry, here's where I'm going with this. Where I'm going with this, Jen, is to look for other times to set little limits to listen to her feelings. So, for example, you know, she wants the red cup. You give her the blue cup. She starts to whine for the red cup. It's a Saturday morning. You don't have anything to do for a few hours, and so you decide you're going to hold the limit. No explanation. You're just going to say, "No, sweetie, we're using the blue cup today." You know. And you don't do this workaround where you get her the other cup so that the day stays calm. You actually make this decision to set a little limit about something that seems inconsequential, just the color of the cup, and so that you can have, that she can have a big cry. And I would just echo Heidi that I think the more opportunity you give her to do that, where you actually can listen all the way through, it's like you're chipping away at the iceberg, chipping away at the iceberg, chipping away at the iceberg. And all of the things you're doing, special time, more special time in smaller doses. So again, she has those endings to bump up against, and that may allow her to release some feelings. Lots of rough and tumble play where you are taking the less powerful role and she just gets to bowl you over. All she has to do is touch you and you fall back. Lots of, you know, scared kids are anxious kids. So make lots of mistakes in your, in your life. Like she asks for orange juice and you get out the banana. You know, she asks you to help her put on her socks and you put them on her hands. You know, things where just like laughter is offloading fear. So you know, even in the time when you get to the point where I can't stay listen anymore, if, you know, you come in with a vigorous snuggle and you start to snuggle and you're looking for the blue beard in the blue bead in her ear or in her nose or between her toes, you know, mm-hmm. or you know, so you're that this is our play listening tool where we're playing whatever with whatever's off track and then we're listening for the laughter. So right. I think as Heidi says, you're working on an emotional project, and so using the tools that way in tandem, I think is going to get you more bang for your buck than just trying to stay listen when she's already fixated. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Those are great ideas. Thank you.
And the big piece of it is you getting lots and lots of listening time. You know, this has been going on a while now, so we build up this resentment and we're trying to stay listen, but in our nonverbal connection with our kids, there is this piece of resentment, which only adds to their anxiety. And it's not intentional on our part. We're really trying to be calm, you know, but it's been going on for months now. And it's like, come on, just get over it. It's just a bee.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So I think you're on a great track, you know, and it's just kind of like tweaking it to put a little bit more like, okay, she wants the red cup. You know, we're using the blue cup today, so I got the time. We don't have to be anywhere for a couple hours. I'm right here, sweetie. There's a article on our website called something like, if you put in yellow bowl, it's exactly that situation where, you know, this dissatisfaction and the mom just set the limit about, no, sweetie, you know, we're going to use the yellow bowl. And, you know, using little opportunities like that before they get fixated will, I think, give you more bang for your buck.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Great question. Yeah, we love talking about emotional projects. All right. It looks like Moni from Chicago, if I'm saying your name. Moni?
Yeah, Monica. Hi.
Monica. Oh, it just showed up, M-O-N-I. Great.
Hello. Thank you for being here, and thank you for taking my question. I have a 3-year-old son and an eight-month-old as well, so there has been a new sibling addition recently. And my 3-year-old has become obsessed with chasing our 4 cats and mistreating them. And it really has been, it's created a lot of struggles in our house because my 8-month-old does not do well when I set him down. So he's usually on me. And my husband is not, it really is like his button when my son does this. And so I have tried many different things. I've tried to get down at his level and ask him nicely not to do that. Then I've tried to talk about it from the cat's perspective and how it makes me feel, and remembering back to situations when my son didn't feel like his friend was treating him nicely, or in trying to build out other perspectives. It just seems like, and I've even tried to ramp up physical play, like park time and everything, in hopes that that could divert that energy elsewhere. At this point, I think it's just when he feels powerless that is his outlet to go and kind of bully the animal. So there's that. And then if I could, there's one other situation we're struggling with around bedtime. He just spirals into like rebellion, where he just, everything is really, really funny and he just doesn't listen to anything. Yeah. So, those are the two situations that we're currently struggling with.
Great. What a brilliant little boy you have. He is just signaling you loud and clear. Mom, I'm scared to death over here. I've been replaced.
Oh.
And Monica, it sounds like you're just such a loving and connected mom, and you're seeing all the signs. One thing I would suggest is when you're able to move in there, you know, maybe you've got your baby in the carrier, the baby's on your back, and you're able to move in and, you know, stop him when he's harassing the cat. And I would ask you to try to move in and set that limit and see if, you know, see how he reacts to that. Maybe you'll get some big feelings that you can listen to. And try not in that moment to access his thinking brain, because he's shown you that he's off track. He's shown you that he's not able to stop with the cat. So move in, say, I'm not going to let you hurt the cat, and leave it at that in that moment. And I like what you're saying to him about, you know, compassion and all that kind of stuff, but I think maybe at a later time when he's not offline in his brain, you guys could have a conversation like that about the cat when he's thinking again, and not even directly related to the time, but even another, like an unrelated time when things are relaxed between you guys, a conversation like that might be helpful. But at the time, to just remember, oh, dear, he's offline, he can't think, I need to move in and stop him and listen to the big feelings that are behind this behavior. And I think you're right on. He's probably feeling helpless. Like Kathy says, he feels replaced and he's not happy about it. And he's showing you. And as far as bedtime goes, a very similar feeling is probably coming up from him. Bedtime is a big time of separation. Like the child is going to sleep on their own, in their own, you know, they're, it's like there's a separation there at bedtime. And all that, you know, silliness and giddiness is kind of, all that ramping up before bedtime is really showing, you know, his fear of being disconnected from you.
Okay, that's a great
Kathy, anything you want to add, Kathy?
Yeah, Monica, everything we said to Jenna, it applies in this case. You know, it working on this as an emotional project, working on this fear. And, you know, it is very, very, very common. It is just the reality. Like, that's why we say, you know, connection breaks. And hand in hand is about helping children release the fear that comes up when connection breaks. Because once they release it, then it's gone, and then you have this emotionally resilient, flexible child. So everything you're going to get a replay of this. Everything we said to Jen absolutely applies for you as well in terms of ramping up the special time, you know, short doses, more frequent, where the timer goes off. You know, rough, you're right on with the rough physical play where you take the less powerful role, especially special time and rough physical play before bedtime. There's a great article on our website. I can never remember the full title, but if you put in send them back or send her back preparing for the baby. Now, the article says preparing for a new baby, but the blueprint, the plan that's in this article is useful even if your baby, you know, even if you got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. It's useful for siblings of almost any age. It's going to give you a blueprint on how to help him release this chunk of fear and really feel the warmth and the connection and the safety that you're trying to pour in. And then I would say one other thing is that whenever hang on a minute. Whenever there's a situation like this where there's some aggression going on, we try to be what's called on friendly safety patrol so that we can avoid unworkable situations. So right now, as much as possible, think of your son being with the cats, being anywhere near the cats is an unworkable situation. So, like, don't even let him go there. Like, don't even let him get near the cats for the moment as you're helping him work on feelings. you know, that's just a way of helping him be more successful. Because, I don't know who said it, I think our first caller about, you know, kids feel a tremendous amount of shame if they've hurt anyone, or anything. And so we want to try to step in before that happens. So that's the last thing I would add. Yeah?
Okay.
Okay. Awesome.
It's a little bit hard because they are free roaming in the house.
Yeah.
And so if I'm, you know, cooking dinner or doing laundry and stuff, I can't always be right there. But I will work on trying to find ways to better engage him so he's not free roaming when they are.
Yeah, yeah. Like maybe he's right there cooking dinner with you, you know.
Yeah.
Or you give him a little bit of special time before you go to cook dinner so that maybe his connection cup is filled enough that it's not the first thing he's going to do. You know.
Okay. That's good.
Okay, awesome. So I'm noticing the time. We still have three people with their hands raised. So what we're going to do is we're going to end the call for the sake of the recording. We're going to do a little wrap up here. That'll be about another 4 or 5 minutes. And then the three people that have your hands raised, if you want to, well, everyone's welcome to stay on the line. But Heidi and I are going to stay on for a little bit longer after we end the call and answer your questions. So, but just for the sake of the recording, we have to say that we hope we've given you some ideas that can help you help your kiddos. We know this is just an hour call and that these wonderful tools take practice. And so we want to continue to work with you and support you. And Heidi, how can parents get a hold of you and what classes and events are you offering?
I have a 6-week in-person starter class here in Petaluma, California, beginning on April 17th. You can find me when you're on the Hand in Hand website. You can put in the search at the top, you can just write Heidi, H-E-I-D-I, and my classes will come up, or you can email me directly. My email address is heidi@handinhandparenting.org.
Great, thanks. And you can connect with me through the Hand in Hand website or my Facebook page, Parenting by Connection with Kathy Gordon. And it's Kathy with a K, and it's G-O-R-D-O-N. Our spring schedule of classes has been posted. And as we mentioned, our 6-week starter class is on sale. You'll get $100 off the class using the code 2017LISTEN. And I'll be offering a starter class online on Thursday at 12 noon Pacific time, which is 8 p.m. in the UK, and it begins Thursday, April 6th. And we still have some spaces in our powerful professional intensive class. If you're a professional or you know of professionals who work with families and you'd like to incorporate our approach into your practice, this 8-week course is phenomenal, and CEUs are available. We also have lots of free resources. I've mentioned we have a hand-in-hand parent support Facebook group, a Yahoo discussion group. Every month there are at least 2 free teleseminars like this one. On March 15th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific, one of our senior instructors, Kirsten Donaldson, is going to offer a step-by-step plan on how to reassure your children and lead your family when life is chaotic or uncertain or full of big changes. And this call is offering our call is offering just 1 or 2 of our tools, and Kristen's really going to explain how you can use all of our tools to give your family some stability and good support during hard times. And hopefully you know that our new book, Listen, has been released, co-authored by our founder, Patty Whiffler, and senior instructor, Tasha Shore. Listen is it's really a step-by-step manual, explains our 5 simple tools, and then gives you specific examples on how to apply them to your daily parenting challenges. Earlier I mentioned we now offer a self-paced, self-guided video classes, and our video classes, they help you apply our listening tools to a specific situation or emotional project that you might be working through, such as sleep, separation, aggression, sibling rivalry, and setting limits, and there's even one on listening partnerships. You can buy those individually, Or you can join our membership program, the Hand in Hand Parenting Club. And for a small monthly fee, every month you get a short instructional video from one of those self-guided courses. And it's sent to you along with some real-life anecdotes that break down your toughest parenting challenges with step-by-step solutions. And you also get a weekly live Q&A coaching call with instructors like myself. Our small supportive classes like the Starter Class and the Professional Intensive, our Yahoo Discussion Group and our Facebook Parent Support Groups, and the Membership Club, these are all great places to find another parent or two or three who are eager to exchange listening time in a listening partnership. And information about these resources and more can be found in our monthly newsletter and also on our website. And there you'll find a schedule of classes along with articles and success stories and just about any subject you want, from weaning to homework to hitting. And again, our website is handinhandparenting.org. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization. We depend on your donation to provide free services like this parenting call, our free parent discussion group, and scholarships for classes and instructor training. It's easy to donate. Any amount helps. You can just click on the donate button on the website and give what you can. And together we can support parents anywhere. With that, we'll wrap up this call. And thank you for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed the teleseminar. It's been wonderful to have you here. We know what it took. Both Heidi and I are parents, so we know what it takes to carve out this time. We really appreciate your commitment to your families and to yourselves, and we hope you'll keep in touch and let us know how it's going. And Heidi, thank you so much for being on this call with me. It's just been a delight and a pleasure to work with you. I really appreciate your insight and especially your commitment to your family and also your commitment to your practice of sharing these tools with families in your area.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm so glad I could do it with you, who was my mentor while I was in my instructor training, and I always learned so much from you, and I appreciate all your warmth and wisdom. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, thank you. So with that, we're going to say goodbye and take a couple of second pause for the recording. Thank you again, all of you, so much, and those of you who came live and those of you who will be listening to the recording, please stay in touch and let us know how we can support you. Okay. Kristen.
Christine
from Pasadena.
Oh, yeah. Yes, great. No, I'm in Petaluma, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, your cell phone says Petaluma.
Yeah, I'm actually in Petaluma as well, Heidi, which is kind of funny. So,
hi.
So I have almost 6-year-old twins, and I did do your, I don't know, intro class or one of your classes like a year or two ago, and most of it we found very useful and actually you're just interesting. One of the earlier callers, like one of my kids, it's like an hour plus of having to sit through, which is fine. And luckily, like, I have a lot of staying power, but I'm usually exhausted at the end of that. But, it's been really, really helpful for us. I think that the two situations that we struggle with a little bit, one is that, one of my twins, he in general, when we need help, his answer is, I don't want to help. And, you know, it's a bit of a challenge because we, you know, that's part of what we do as a family, and we end up bringing the limit, but we've, that's one of the cases that we've struggled to find a way to do it in a way that does not, involve threats and other things, you know, a more constructive way of bringing that limit. And then the second thing that is our biggest challenge is really just with the two of them together. And, you know, and like, you know, like all siblings, they play well for a while. But it's really interesting. We've been finding more and more that you can tell that they feel like the other one's not listening to them and that they're feeling disconnected from each other. And there almost seems to be where even connecting with my husband or I, isn't filling that gap of them feeling like they're not being heard, of them feeling like, you know, they're not
connected, like they're not friends with their brother anymore. They don't want to be friends with them because they're not playing in the way. They're maybe saying hurtful things. And it's a really big challenge for us because, and you can just hear where they're saying, you know, no, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. And you can just tell there's just no connection there. And, you know, it's hard because I'm like, you know, I almost want them to take the, you know, these courses and be like, you know, you need to listen and, you know, these things. But they, you know, then, like you said, they're both shut down. They're both out of sorts because they don't feel like they're being listened to. And those become really challenging moments for us. So those are kind of my two that I would love your perspectives on is kind of that getting, you know, over that, like, I don't want to help. You know, which is a genuine emotion. And then also just getting over that really what becomes a really entangled emotional thing between the two of them when they both are kind of mentally shut down and just aren't connected to each other. And that creates a lot of really hurt feelings between the two of them.
And Christine, do you have a listening partner or partners?
You know what? I don't have like through your group, but I would say I have a really good network of my people between my husband's actually a fantastic partner and is right there with me. And then I have a sister who I'm really close to who has kids around the same age. And we were very, you know, I think have the kind of relationship you talked about of being able to really just unload anything.
Great. Yeah. Because that's crucial that, you know, whenever there's, you know, that there's a stuck place, whether it's stuck because somebody is repetitively, habitually refusing to help, or whether it's that kind of sibling stuff, it is crucial that we are getting listening time. And the kind of listening time where the person's not going to give you any advice, they're not going to fix you, you know, they're not going to reflect back, they're not going to refer, you're not going to discuss. It's really that you just get to offload your feelings, your fears, the resentment that's built up. And, you know, as you said, after you stay listened for a long time, you're exhausted. And, we have to have some place to take that so that, you know, so that we have some gas. And it's fascinating to me, but over and over and over again with my son, when I get listening time around a place where we're stuck, a couple things can happen. One is that I get a new idea about how to, you know, sort of get him more connected, get him to be more flexible. It usually involves me being more playful. And the second is that oftentimes he shifts. It's really because of this, you know, attunement that we have with our kids, oftentimes we shift. So I wanted to just encourage you to do that first, particularly since you've got, you know, a big job of twins. And then, you know, I have some other ideas, but Heidi, I'm going to pass it over to you.
Great. I wanted to echo a little bit about listening partnerships and mention that when your child is in a particular hard place where you're having to listen for longer than 30 minutes and now it's going on an hour, the listening partnerships really, really help in that sense, especially if you're getting regular listening time. I know that I've had moments where it's like a Sunday and my kid is melting down and I'm thinking like, oh God, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can listen. And then I'm like, oh, I've got listening time tomorrow. And just knowing that I was going to be listened to the next day because it had been such a practice for me, I was able to sit and listen to him even just with the expectation that I would get listened to the next day. So really when you're using listening partnerships the way that Kathy explained it, it really, really can help you be there for the longer listens. And the longer that we can listen and really get to the end of an upset, you're really going to start to see progress. Getting to the end, you're going to see your kid come back to themselves, and it's going to clear a lot of cobwebs away. So the more often you can do that, the better. Kathy, I need to get ready to pick up my son.
Oh,
so would you mind
you do.
Taking over?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm happy to. Thanks, Heidi.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thanks. So did you have any thoughts? I mean,
about, like, the two together, how...
So the two together is that it's really clear. This is, like, they've reached the point where they can no longer, you know, they're neither one of them is thinking. So what we do when no one is thinking is that we get in, and I love Larry Cohen's quote from Playful Parenting. He says, you have to get in it to transform it. So now whatever they're bickering about, you get in it, and like, I don't know, you're the monster. Or, you know, you get in it where you start a sock fight. Or you get in it where you start, you know, and it's a sock fight is, you know, whoever has their socks on last is the one, you know, is the winner. And you get them to gang up on you. So the part of siblings, the sibling relationship, part of our job in terms of, and I only have one, so I'm talking what I've read, what my cohorts tell me, but what Patty says, because Patty had two, is it part of, the job of a parent with siblings is not just to stop the squabbles, but also to nurture the relationship. And the relationship gets nurtured the more you're doing play where you're encouraging them to gang up on you, where you have, you know, a nightly ritual of pillow fights where they best you, or a weekly ritual of sock fights where they best you. And then and you as the leader of your family, as the chief emotional officer of your family, you notice the patterns, and you notice how long they can go without before they start bickering. Maybe it's 10 minutes. Maybe you've also noticed something like, oh, on days where they both each get special time, they do play better together. So, gosh, it's been 3 days since I was able to give them special time. So my response for what to do in the moment is to get in it and to get them to gang up on you, to be playful, to get the giggles going, because giggles, laughter is offloading tension and will help them get back into a thinking place. When you have that kind of bickering, you cannot, it's very difficult to bring any kind of a limit that stops it immediately. It's much easier to get in it and transform it. Now, if it does seem to be like one person, like let's say your son is going off on your daughter, like he's really upset and he's saying horrible things to her, I mean, then you can step in, set a limit, and say, no, sweetie, we don't talk to each other in our family that way. And, you know, you're right there in between them. You can then, you know, say to your, to your other child, he really loves you. He's just having a hard time. He's not thinking right now. You know, that's part of nurturing their relationship. Is, you know, protecting one from the vitriol of the other in a way that doesn't shame the one, but it just says, you know, he's not thinking right now. And so, you know, you step in, and this is where, you know, one is clearly off track and the other is not, but you step in, and the one who's off track is you set the limit, and then you say, you know what, sweetie, you know, you and I are going to go upstairs for a little bit. You can say anything you want, you know, we can have some time and you can tell me how hard it is up there, but I'm not going to let you say those words to your sister. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think the bringing the silly, it seems like it's so intense, and I think we do a lot of silly, but I don't think we do as much in those moments. So that could be an interesting one to weave in. So I think that's an interesting idea, that we could definitely try. And, I think that's probably the biggest idea that I'll take from this, is say, let me try to throw some silly in there and just see if I can dissipate the energy of the situation.
Yeah, and I think the same is true with the I won't help. So,
yeah.
You know, that's that stuck place. You say, well, you are going to help. Okay, now we're in a power, you know, now it's your stuck place against my stuck place. But if I come in with a vigorous snuggle and say, like, you know, whoa, where's that stubborn, where's that stubborn bug? I need to get that stubborn bug out of your ears. That stubborn bug in between your toes, you know, and I'm snuggling, and I got to snuggle that stubbornness right out of you. Snuggle, snuggle, snuggle. You know, one of the ways, you know, that I would get my son to put his clothes away is we put a basketball hoop up, pick up his dirty clothes. This is a hamper. We had a hamper, you know, and I challenged him sort of in a basketball game of where I was blocking him and he couldn't throw the clothes. You know what I mean? It was like,
no.
You know, he shoots, he scores. You know, I got him to start I have a 13-year-old who actually puts down the toilet seat after himself.
Yeah.
You know, and I got that to happen by every time I'd walk in there and the toilet seat was up and I would go, help, help, I'm going to fall in the toilet, help, somebody help me. You know, and he'd laugh and laugh and then he'd come in and he'd put it down. But now there's no tension around that and so he puts it down.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what the laughter gets, helps loosen up the knot of tension that's causing the refusal.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's good. Those are good. I mean, it's funny because we do a lot of silly, but then there's these certain moments where we don't. And, you know, why not try it in those moments and see if we can get a different result? So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. And that's also like I take it to listening partnership. Like, why do I get so tight in that moment? Like what, you know, so I take it to listening partnership and kind of dig and see what's underneath there, what my fear is, what some old feeling of powerlessness is. You know, laugh or cry about it, and then often I come up with like a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
So. Great.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Question. Tina.
Hi. Oh.
Yeah. Right here. Oh, do we lose you? Uh oh. Oh, Gina. I'm sorry.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I accidentally re-muted you. Okay.
Okay, no problem. Thank you. I'm still giggling over the falling in the, I'm going to fall into the toilet. That was great. So I have a question. One is about, I guess if maybe you could more specifically like parse out how to sort of stay in the stay listening.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, I think, you know, so I have two children, two boys that are 6 and 4. And I find that oftentimes, you know, when I do, you know, gently bring a limit and we begin the stay listening, there's a lot of resistance. And I guess, and then I start to feel, you know, like they don't sort of immediately start to cry or shed, you know, shed the upset. So sometimes, you know, there's a lot of, they walk away, they run away, they start picking up toys and playing with that. Like they're really avoidant. And, and so I guess that's sort of some of the, where I find challenging, like, how do I kind of keep them in it? And sometimes they'll even, you know, they'll even say to me like, you know, mom, like, why aren't you saying anything? And I'm like, you know, I'm just sort of smiling at them and being really quiet, you know, just sort of trying to let whatever is going to arise. And anyway, so I'd love some, a little bit more about that.
Great question. Yeah. So, and it's a little bit of a multifaceted question for several reasons. One is, you know, you set a limit with your 2-year-old, and they still, their brain and nervous system is still tuned into our natural healing process of, you know, we get hurt, we go down the slide, we get hurt, we bump our bottom to, you know, or bump our elbow, the little one, and they look, they find their person, and then they cry, and if allowed to cry without being shamed or shushed or distracted or overwhelmed by their parents' panic, then that child most often goes right back up on the slide, right? That's our natural healing process. So yeah. When our kids are two and we set a limit, they throw themselves on the ground. They have a good hard cry for 5, 10, 15 minutes longer if there's some chunk of fear in there that we don't know how it got there. Maybe, you know, we don't know. Hard birth, who knows? But you know, and then they cry all the way through and then they recover and they're, you know. So as kids get older, they're out in the world and they're taught, they figure out that it's not okay to cry. And they also figure out that when I'm out in the world, I have to tamp my feelings down.
Mm-hmm.
I feel anxious, I feel scared, I feel disconnected. You know, none of this is conscious because that part of our brain doesn't have any access to language, reasonable language anyway. So I just feel, I just tamp it down, right? I maintain. So, you know, so oftentimes when you start using these tools with older children, what it requires is that we build a lot of safety and connection before you start to see feelings. And the best way to do that is to, as much as you can, is to set limits playfully. So can you give me an example of a limit that you've set where you feel like you're just sitting there and they're not doing anything?
Yeah. Lately we've been having a lot of issues at the dinner table. And, you know, like we'll be serving dinner and both of them, you know, they sort of play off each other. They'll say like, you know, yuck. And they'll like get up from the table and go away from their chair and then come back. So, you know, so we really, I'm trying to, you know, I'm setting a limit around, you know, once you're at the table, we stay at the table. And also, you know, when we sit down to eat, you know, speaking respectfully about food. It's like, you don't have to like everything we're eating, but you still need to be respectful about how you express that.
Okay. So here's how you set that limit. They say, yeah. And you say, absolutely. That's what I cooked tonight. I cooked the very best yuck recipe I could find. It is it's premium yuck. It's yuck. You know, it's like this is what we call play listening. You play with the oppositional behavior and you listen for the laughter. So now they're engaged. Now they're connected. Now, you know, and so then it's like, so what else do you have? Oh, we have icky poo. Yes, we have icky poo on the menu tonight. Oh, it's my favorite icky poo. So, you know, now this requires us getting listening time in order for us to be playful, because probably when we were at the dinner table, when we were children, if we got silly, we got smacked or, you know, punished. So we've got this idea of what dinner time should look like and what it means if children are not behaving a certain way, what that means about me as a parent, what that means about me as a person. Yeah.
Right.
So we take it to listening time. Like, what if all hell broke loose at dinner time? What if we had food fights? Ooh, let's have food fights. You know, whatever. But I mean, it's like, you know, like, so you can laugh and cry about your own childhood dinner time. I mean, my dinner time was I didn't eat meat for years because every time I went to, like, I thought about eating meat, I could see was my father's snarling face with the carving knife, cutting the bloody roast beef, going, shut up, you know. So it's like those memories are stuck and they inform our thinking, right?
Right.
So the more playful you can be around setting limits, and here's what I recommend. Go to our website, put in the word play, put in the word dinner time. There's a great article called What If I'm Not a Playful Parent? They're actually our communications director wrote an article based on a Facebook post that I did where I made a list of things like, you know, watch some old Dick Van Dyke. Watch some Charlie Chaplin. Watch some Three Stooges. I'm fortunate in that I had a very silly mother. I'm not sure she would have gone with the yuck routine, but she was very silly, very, very silly. And so I can channel her. But if you don't have that in your experience, like if nobody was ever playful when you were a child, then we need to spark our imagination by reading Larry Cohen's playful parenting book, stealing his ideas, going to our website, putting in the word play, you know, all of the different, you know, playful ideas that can inspire you. And then get listening time. Get listening time around all the times that are hard so that you can find out what's my tightness about. Before my kids can shift, I have to shift.
Yeah, because, you know, I think you're right, you know, I'm very playful in other areas, but I'm aware, like, oh, that's actually a place where I feel some rigidity, you know, or lack of flexibility. But in other areas, it's very easy for me to turn something into something playful and, you know, diffuse the kind of charge around it. So like you said, there's probably something, like you said, take that to the listening, because that's, there's probably more personal charge around that, personal trigger. And
then the other thing to do about the hard places is do rough and tumble play. Make sure everyone is really connected before you get to the dinner table. Because there may be this time where you're cooking dinner, they're off on their own, and now they come back with their connection cups empty.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah?
Absolutely. So, yeah.
You know, so putting in a sock fight or a pillow fight or rough and tumble, or, you know, give each kid, you and your husband split up and give each other, I'm assuming partner, I don't remember if you said if there was a partner, but you and your partner split up and give each kid 5 minutes of special time, or, you know, just make sure everybody's connection cup is full before you come to the dinner table.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, you know, with them getting up and down out of their chairs, you know, like, wouldn't it be kind of silly if we even played musical chairs, you know, right before dinner, like everybody sat in a different seat or something.
Or maybe the game is, you're glued to your seat. I'm stuck. I can't get out, you know. So, again, and the play listening is always like, I'm making fun of myself. I'm not making fun of you.
Yeah. Right.
That's the important thing about the play listening. So.
Right.
Great question. Okay. I'm supposed to end this at 12:30, but let me see if I can quickly, I got somebody from Portland, Oregon here.
Hi, that's me. It's Mara.
Hi, Mara.
I think I know the answer because I've been listening to all these other questions. But I have a 3.5-year-old, and I'm.
Oops.
You herself. Hello.
Oh, sorry. I accidentally remuted you. Okay, I'm right here.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. So I have a 3.5-year-old, and I'm just thinking about how to do things, or like get her to do things that I think she can do, like get dressed and put on socks and shoes that I generally just do for her. And
I
noticed just even talking about it, I'm like, oh, I feel really scared about introducing it. And so, so that's my question.
You can go one of two ways, and I would try. You can hold an expectation. You can do that, sweetie. However, I would try the playful way first. You know, I would do the, like, I'm the village idiot. And you hand her you say, oh, well, do these go here? And you put the socks on her ears. And then she starts to giggle. No, mommy, they go on my feet. Oh, where are your feet? And you put them on her hands. You know, so any tension that she has around, And let me back up and say that oftentimes children expecting you or wanting you to do something is more a need for connection than it is actually, than it is like that they're scared of doing it. So if you start out the day with 5 minutes of special time, and then you're very playful about the getting dressed part, I suspect that she will very quickly start to do that on her own. But all kids need connection first thing in the morning. All human beings need connection. I mean, you know that if you're in a partnership, you know the worst thing in the world if you get up in the morning and your partner's busy and just, like, barely gives you the time of day.
Right.
Right? So connection in the morning is crucial. You know, they've just been separated from you for this long time while they've been sleeping. So connection is crucial. And then, you know, and then be playful. You are setting a limit. You're holding this expectation that she can do it, but you're doing it playfully by being confused and bumbling and silly. And so she has to show you how to do it.
Well, and I imagine
where do they go?
And I imagine the best time to try it is not when we have to get out the door in 5 minutes, but, like, when we have plenty of time. I think that's
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, my 13-year-old still says, wakes up in the morning and says, "Mom, what should I wear?" And he wears a uniform. So I translate that as, "Mom, I need connection."
Yeah.
You know.
Thank you so much for this.
Yeah. Great. Great. And Thousand Oaks.
Hi, Kathy. I have a situation where my child is a yeller and a screamer.
Yeah.
The big problem is that my child is 37 years old.
Oh.
And my child has a 7-year-old son who is himself a huge ball of emotional project.
Yeah.
But I've taken this to listening time and the whole bit, and I just can't seem to help her understand that when she brings a limit, she has to actually bring it, not yell it across the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, you know, that the yelling and screaming is probably only adding, you know, more attention to the situation than helping. But and her sister has talked to her about it, and nobody can quite seem to get through.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough because, you know, she's got so much fear and sadness packed in there and so much feeling of powerlessness. I think what I would recommend is that you, both when you are with her and you are not with her, is that you spend a tremendous amount of time thinking well of her. That when you're there, even if she's yelling at your grandson, that you shine your light on her and you just think so here's my, not quite hand in hand, but here's my homework. Make every day, make a list of everything you appreciate about her. So that when you're in that tough spot and you want to start lecturing her, that you can hold the thought, "I'm sorry you're having such a hard time. You're doing the best you can. You really want to be a good mom," you know. So because there's a great article on the website. It's not exactly applicable to this, but it's called "The Feud: Stopping the Family Feud Stops with Me." Michelle, one of our instructors, Michelle Pate, wrote the article, and she talks about giving that family member that you're struggling with, giving them either actual special time where you say, "Hey, you know, I got 20 minutes. I just would love to give you my attention. I haven't spent any time with you. You know, what do you want to do for 20 minutes? I'll do anything you want to do, or, you know, I'm just right here to listen."
Let me tell you, she doesn't have 20 minutes. I've tried even taking her shopping to get 20 minutes out of her.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, one of the things you might explore in listening time is, well, are there resources that you can bring to her life that could help her, that might ease the physical stress in her life. So, you know, I mean, you can only do so much. You can only offer special time, unannounced special time, shining your light on her. You know, you can, but the lecturing and correcting is just going to send things in the opposite direction. You can model, you can dribble information by leaving an article on the back of the toilet or something, you know what I mean? Like, but And then you can be that safe space for your grandchild. You know, you are the one that gives your grandchild special time. You are the one that...
Oh, no, she does. She does special time, not regularly. I mean, she does know hand in hand. You know, she has taken hand in hand. But it's really the screaming and the yelling that she has quite not gotten, been able to...
And that all, you know, that comes from a sense of powerlessness and hurt. And then, you know, until she is willing to work on that, all you can do is say, you know, when she starts to scream and yell, you can, all you can do is maybe move in and say, you know, I'm right here. Can I help? And she may say no, you know, but the thing is she may be more willing to allow you to be, to have her back, to support her, if you are working on just appreciating her. Yeah?
Okay. Super, Kathy. I appreciate it.
All right. Yeah.
Take care.
Great. So I'm sorry. I see that there's one person anonymous that has a call. I'm actually even 10 minutes over the extra 30 minutes that we offered. So I'm sorry I can't take your question, but I am the moderator on the Hand in Hand Facebook group, Hand in Hand Parent Support. I'm more than happy to answer your questions there, or you can also go to the Yahoo discussion group if you're not a Facebook person and post questions there. That group is also moderated, so you'll get an answer from an instructor. So thank you all so much, especially those of you who hung in there and stayed extra, and do check out Kirsten's call on the 15th on, you know, being the leader, excuse me, in your family when you're going through rough times. And everybody have a great rest of your day or evening if you're overseas. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.